All right, let's be honest. Who really has time to wait for all that bullshit nowadays? No one does. It's a fast life out there. Live fast, die young. Am I right? Or is that... No, that's not how I want to start this. DraftKings, Stick and Rink, is proud to be brought to you by DraftKings, people. The number one sports book in all of daily fantasy. And depending where you live in the States, possibly even just an open sports book. But we're going to talk more about the daily fantasy today. So I personally love using DraftKings. I use it every morning on my face when I'm shaving and also under my pits to help with the smell. DraftKings is the go-to product when you want to make some money off some other schlumps who don't know nothing about sports. So check it out. We do have a promo code. Use the promo code THPN at sign up. This allows you to get a free entry with your first $5 deposit. That's a free entry with your first $5 deposit. You have not seen an offer like this on any infomercial late at night, like 10 years ago. If you ever watching like Spike TV at like 4 a.m., there was some like Slap Chop commercials, shit like that. You would never find a deal like this on those infomercials. This is one of a kind. So check it out. Basketball, hockey, U.S. Open golf, bet on Titty Boy from Greece, losing the French Open. That's never good. Plenty of options out there, people. But that's small news. Promo code THPN. Check it out. DraftKings, thank you very much for all the support over the time. DraftKings, we appreciate it. The more important thing to get to, guys, this is our goodbye. This is a big time goodbye. Let's hold in the emotions here. The fellas, which are Elijah, Josh, and Raffle, the ones who have been with you for now 2 years. Is this the second year of Stick and Rink, I think?
Coming to the end of it,
Yep, 2 full years of doing this now. If you had told me before that it'd be that long, I would have gotten the fuck out of Dodge and ran away. But no, here we are. And all kidding aside, I want to welcome the fellas for one last time to the Stick and Rink podcast. Josh, how you doing?
Oh, harder, baby.
There you go. Good, man. Dude, just a whirlwind of emotions, man. I know that obviously last episode we did the live episode with Fan Interaction, and I felt that that went great. But yeah, man, we're coming to the Stick and Rink listeners for one final time here. And it's been an awesome ride. Obviously, the show goes on. The bus don't stop for no one. We're still going to be podcasting, just not underneath this brand or this network, but I think obviously we can't say enough about Thippin, the THPN boys, Dylan, Isha, the boys, for giving us a shot, bringing us up to the big leagues. But we're sending ourselves back into the Mindsies. So I'll throw it back into Raf. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. I'm fucking out here chilling. It's kind of a sad way to say goodbye to you guys, you know? Well, not goodbye, but just like see you for now.
Yeah.
Dude, we got, what's it called? I want to see how long it takes for one of us to get like emotional about us leaving the whole network. See if we get some waterworks going halfway through the episode or not.
Dude, if I get drunk enough, I might start crying. So we'll see. I don't know. You guys know I'm the sensitive one out of the three of us. So
how many White Claws do you think that's going to take?
It would take a lot, I would say. probably like a six pack, and for you guys to like really insult me and
start
really
drinking, buddy.
And we really question my character. So E, how are you doing? Sure. One final time, buddy. How are you?
One final time. I'm doing all right, man. I'm doing pretty great. On the topic of alcohol, I feel like at this point it would take like one drop of alcohol to get me crying, because that at this point, sober Elijah is like keeping logic and keeping handling your emotions at the peak level right now. Any kind of depressant hitting this body like that, dude, it's going to be... to be like a chemical reaction where you pour like two what are they called? Elmenhire flasks?
Sure.
No, they're not called that.
I don't know.
Fuck it. There's a flask with the letter E. You pour with those two shits together, it blows up. That's what would happen if I put alcohol in my body right now.
It's going to be like a fifth grade volcano project. You mix the baking soda, you mix the vinegar, you drop in some food coloring, and boom, you got tears.
Probably a way easier analogy to make right there.
There you go.
But yeah, no, kind of an emotional emotional goodbye. I think it's not as emotional though, because so we already got one comment in the Twitter chat as well. And to any of those who are listening to the podcast version of this, like we touched on it during our fan kind of community episode there last Tuesday. But we're not done. This is not really goodbye from the internet or anything like that. But we are saying goodbye to the Stick and Rink brand. We're saying goodbye to the Hockey Podcast Network, and we are pursuing some other endeavors. We're kind of taking a step back from this style of podcasting and this style of content, and which is like very Canucks based, very hockey based, and, you know, part of a larger network. And we're taking a step back and taking a more personal approach to this. So we've got some things in the pipeline to do with lots of video content, video projects to do with YouTube and stuff like that. More lengthy things that also involve, you know, better quality and more intention put behind them. But also, we're also looking to continue the podcast, but we're going to do it in a much more comedy entertainment standpoint, and then some sports added on top. It's not going to be a very Canucks centric thing to do. So that's why it's not, I think that's why it's not emotional for me. I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but yeah, that's where I kind of stand on that.
I think you speak for everybody when you say that though.
Yeah.
I think we're all kind of very excited to move on to something like a little bit more new, like a little bit more fresh, you know?
Yeah. And that's just, you know what? Yeah, fucking Ridwan in the chat talking about Trevor Wallace. Is that, that's who does the Stiff Socks, right?
Yeah, that's a fun one. Stiff Socks is a really good one.
Well, I think one of my favorite, you know, there's way too many podcasts out there nowadays, and here we are just creating another one. But one of my favorite parts about all these podcasts out there is there's some pretty fucking good names. I'll give them that. Yeah. Like the Stiff Socks, like you win. I'll subscribe to you. I will never listen to you. I'll subscribe to you just because of the name right there. That's an easy take. But no, fellas, I mean, so we drew up a pretty, I'm going to say a pretty fucking good outline for this last episode. So we are not going out, you know, dicks in our hands here. We're going to swing for the fences one last time. Yeah. We've already asked how you guys are doing. I do want to take this in a certain direction, and I want to bring up a certain topic, if I remember what it was. I'm not going to name any names here. I'm not going to put anyone on the spot, but we got some people up in the friend groups who are dealing with a certain step of life that, comes when you meet a girl and you go through the process of having to introduce said girl into friends. And actually, you know, we'll just blanket statement, introducing them to anyone.
Yeah.
That comes with a lot of different experiences, doesn't it, guys?
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of firsts, lots of awkward pauses. Yeah. I don't know how this is going to go over, but we'll see how it goes.
Why don't we talk about this? So first, like you get a new, like you kind of get into a new thing, whatever you want to call it, whatever words happen, whatever labels you put on it. And so what should we go for first? Meeting the parents, either side, you introducing a girl to your parents or being introduced to her parents. Which one would you say is worse?
In my opinion, I would say my parents. Yeah. I don't, they're,
that's
they're
the
not
correct response.
They're not judgy, by any means, but you never know. Right. Like, and your parents, I think though, no matter what side you're meeting, like if a girl's meeting my parents or if I'm meeting hers, it's more so just, I think the parents realize it's like, I just want my child to be happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very sweet.
So yeah, I know there's a touching answer. But nonetheless though, I mean, you just think, because for me, whenever I've done it in the past, I always wonder, it's like, Josh, like, are you dating a bimbo? Like, are you dating like a kids? Like, is she going to be really stupid? Because your parents aren't dumb. You know what I mean? I don't think all of our parents are dumb, but like my biggest fear is like the girl saying like something really stupid. which I know that she wouldn't, but it's just like, what if
you're not afraid of you doing that?
Well, both technically. I mean, like for me, like whenever I meet her parents, I want to make sure that, you know, I'm not saying anything dumb. I'm not swearing. Like I'm very like put together, but like when she's meeting yours, you're like, okay, like, you know, you're not dumb, but please don't have a brain fart when you meet them. Like ever. Yeah. Don't ever have it. You know, like the first impression is the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not wrong.
Raph?
I think mine is definitely meeting my parents. I like to think I'm pretty okay meeting parents. Like, I feel like I can talk and I can like get along with everybody.
It's pretty hard to hate your face in the first bit.
Thank you. So, thank you. That means a lot. Thank you so much.
You're able to learn. I've figured that out, but in the first bit, it's hard to.
Yeah. But I definitely think the more difficult part is meeting my parents, because my mom is an angel. She's like literally so nice, like super welcoming, all that kind of stuff. But it's my dad that is so fucking like stone faced all the time, and you have no idea how he feels about anything.
He's very like, rigid.
The guy's a legend, but it's like he'll say like a handful of words to you, and he'll just be like, "Hey," and then that'll be it. I'm like, "Okay, fucking sick first interaction, dude." Like, you're just gonna leave it at that, and he's just like, he'll maybe like say like a few things here and there, and then out of nowhere, like, what's it called? Like, we were hanging out one time, and he's just like barely said like a handful of words to Carly, and we were just like hanging out, and then he's just like, "You guys want to play Jumbo Jenga?" And I'm like, "What the fuck, dude?" I'm like, "Is this like your icebreaker right now?" He's like, "Okay." Yeah. Like, he'll do like weird shit like that. But like for the first little bit, like you can't. It's like, it's tough to get to know him.
Man.
Yeah.
Nice. I love it. Yeah, I would agree that like meeting my parents and just in general my family would probably be like the thing I'm most worried about, because it's like I know who they are. I know they're over the long term and over like multiple appearances, they will appear as normal. But like, this is like sending someone up like, "All right, dude, you have one plate appearance. Like, you better do well."
Yeah.
You're sending my family up for one plate appearance. And I like, my family's a very unique family. We've got a lot of shit going on over there. Not like any family doesn't. But, and then you throw the personalities in there. My mom's a lovely lady. My dad, lovely person. Brother, sister, everyone. They're great people. But they're just like, I've been there for some of the conversations and I'm like, holy fuck, dude. If this was their first interaction with us, yikes. But I feel much more in control when I'm the one being introduced. Like, I get to control the narrative. So if it ends up all fucky, it's probably my fault.
Mm-hmm.
But if it does, the flip side, if it ends up all fucky, it was most likely not my fault.
You know what, though?
It's hard to comprehend.
You know what, though? I like that comparison, because it's not maybe so much that the person you're introducing to your parents, but it's also like your parents.
You're introducing your parents to them.
Yeah. It's like, where do you come from? And like, if your mom or dad says something dumb, or like they say something like really funny, or if they hit it off, that person is like, okay, like I'm starting to piece together, like, how Josh acts or the way that he is, like all this is starting to make
sense. Yeah.
The reason why he is the way that he is.
Yeah.
I love
it. Run together now.
My question for you guys is this: would you rather introduce somebody to your parents first or to your friend group first?
I would go parents first. Like, I feel like that's the very, well, actually, okay. No, right, no, yeah. Sorry. I didn't think about that before I said it. Cause I feel like there's kind of like a significance, I guess, to introducing someone to your parents. Like, you know, like that's always looked as like socially like a big step for some reason. I don't think it should be, but it's looked as like I met his parents already. That's kind of weird. Like, no, it's like fucking people in my life. I don't know.
Yeah. I think though, the biggest thing with that though, is the way that you meet the parents. Okay. Yeah, so the girl that I dated for 4 years, I met her parents through me walking my girlfriend at the time home from school. And like,
oh boy,
her parents were just in the driveway. And like, they knew she had a boyfriend. We hadn't met yet.
Yeah.
But they were super welcoming. However, if the first time you're meeting them, it's like a nice big fancy dinner in like a restaurant, it's like, dude, like there's nowhere to go. Like, you're there for like an hour and a half, two hours.
Yeah.
And you can't poop. You can't poop in the restaurant, because that's just awkward. You can't disappear to the bathroom for more than like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, you're stuck at that table.
Yeah.
On the flip side of your question, so that's like the parent setting. My friends, I feel like the setting with friends is always very informal. You know, it's like, let's go for drinks, you know, come hang out at my place, you know, whatever it is. However, in our specific scenario, do I want to introduce a girl to my mutant friend group? The girls are fine, but there's certain people in our friend group, and the people listening know who I'm talking about. It's actually one specific person. Do I want my girlfriend meeting this guy who's just like an absolute menace to society? I've always wondered that, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like, God, like, Josh hangs out with a bunch of fucking tool sheds. Like, what is he doing?
Josh just hangs out with a bunch of fucking mouth breathers.
Isn't that exactly the comparison you talk about with the parents, where like you start to figure out like, oh, that's why he is the way he is. Like, I get it now.
Yeah, like, I feel like they get...
There's a lot of explaining about yourself.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I feel like the parents paint the picture. So, like, who you were growing up and like kind of like shaping like your values and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But your friend group shapes the way that you are now.
But day to day, they shape who you are day to day.
Yeah, you model yourself after the people that you're around the most, which is easily your friends, especially at this age. So it's definitely an interesting one. But I would say the friend group is my answer. I would much rather introduce to friends and then parents.
Yeah. I would. It's this is an interesting point. Like on what you said, like introducing to friends. I've been in a long-term committed relationship of as they say now for about 7 years. So this is old territory for me. It's almost like can't even remember. But I have been told as the person being introduced now over the span of many different people, I've been told there's been things I've been told before, like, hey, Elijah, like keep your shirt on. I don't want them seeing you shirtless because like that's not fair. And I completely understand that. Like that's
fair.
That makes sense. I don't want to make anyone jealous, you know, that's totally par for the course for me.
Can we talk about though, like on the topic of meeting friends though, how long it took you to introduce your girlfriend to everybody?
Dude, I've talked to Megan before about this and she says it did not take that long. Like she's on record saying that, not me.
You and Megan dated for a year.
No, before I met no Megan. Chance.
100% chance. For a year.
Well, no, actually, I will probably agree to that. But also, you and I weren't that close for that year because I was going to school still.
Yeah, we were in different universities.
Yeah, we were like, we literally didn't see each other for months at a time.
Yeah, but we still like whereas nowadays, hang out at your place.
Not often, though. Like, I would say not even once a month, dude. Like, it wasn't that much. Maybe you're right. Maybe it was a year. Maybe I avoided you. I didn't want you taking your shirt off, showing her your little hairy pepperoni nipples, you know?
Okay, get the fuck out of here. Get the fuck out of here.
So, yeah. Okay, so introducing girls to the friend group, this is an interesting one. Now, we're at a very interesting age right now where, not interesting, it's a clear age where we're still young. And like Josh said, everything's very informal. So, you know, it could be large groups at times. It could be like just fucking on a whim at a beach after a drunk night. Things like this that just make it easy to do things. But you know what I'm kind of worried about is as we get older, like once you get into your 30s, dude, or like even close to it, you kind of get away from this informal stuff because you don't have a lot of time, right?
Yeah.
Like almost every interaction you have with anybody, whether it's introducing them to someone or not, is like, hey, do you want to grab dinner? Or like, do you want to do this very scheduled activity because that's the time we have set aside? So it's like, dude, well, that could be fucking scary one day.
But you know what though? As you get older, and I hate saying this because like you said, we're getting to that age where we are getting older, probably, you know, six to seven years away from this.
All three of us are fucking closer to 50 than we are to zero.
But
so.
I mean,
like, technically, yeah.
I hate the day when I have to message one of you two shitheads being like, hey guys, like you want to go to like a nice restaurant with me and so-and-so and like have one of you guys be like, wait, what? Like we're going for like dinner, like a formal dinner. And we're like, yeah, like dinner. Or you go over to someone's like brand new house or something. And you're just like what is this? Like we're just having wine and we're just talking, like we're not doing
chilling
shots
out.
And we're not, you know, just
partying hard.
Josh, we're already there for that one, dude. I do not party hard. I would say like 19 out of 20 times I do not party hard anymore.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
Yeah, I don't know.
But think about it this way though too. Like if you think about a friend group and the amount of people that are, let's say, like doing new things and whatnot, like let's say like getting houses or doing this, that, the other, right? Who do you introduce your significant other two first? Because like obviously you can't get them all out of the way within like a week or a month window, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I think
we have so many different people that like we are close with that we'd have to introduce them to at some point.
I think that you
and you don't want to offend anybody by introducing them a little bit later than someone else, you know?
Well, I think the biggest thing, and if they're really your friends, they would understand, but I would always try and cater that, you know, my significant other's personality to the couple that I'm introducing them to.
Yes.
Like similar personalities, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so like if someone is very introverted, I'm not going to go to someone who's like really like outgoing and fucking energetic. Like I'm going to go to someone who is a little bit more not reserved, but also just introverted,
yes.
You know, but if I had like someone who's very talkative and like, we want to, you know, go out and like just have instant conversation, like, and just start laughing right off the get-go, then I would cater to that friend as well.
Yeah. You know? But another big factor that you also have to consider, so it's just like the timing of the whole thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, some people could not be available immediately. Some people could have other shit going on. Your schedules just don't match up, line up. So it could also be kind of problematic in that sense.
I would say, like, looking back now and analyzing the way that fucking 19 and 20 year old Elijah handled this situation, it was very much like, is it called baptism by fire? Is that what it's called?
Trial by fire.
Trial by fire or something like that. Yeah. I was like, I was literally just throwing her into every large social situation that there was. I was like, it was at the time of university, it was like, hey, there's a party tonight and like everyone I know is going to it. So we'll just meet everyone. Don't worry.
But you know what, though? That might also, that's also pretty good in the sense that, you know, for example, if you're double dating, you don't have to rely on just two people to make conversation with your significant other. Like, everyone's going to meet her. So if you bring her to everyone, there's going to be 10 people lined up that are going to want to talk to her.
Yeah.
And there's, hopefully you bat at least like 5 for 10, where 5 people can actually vibe and maybe the other 5 don't. They don't necessarily dislike her, but they just have not common interests.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun. But it totally goes to the personality thing, like you were saying, though, because like if it was flipped and if I was had to be introduced to like a large number of people in whatever amount of time, I'm the type of person where it's like, dude, just like drop me off. Like I'm a kid going for a play date. You don't even need to be there. I'll just introduce myself. Like I'm a lone wolf. Though, I can do it.
Me personally speaking, I need some liquid courage if I'm going into like a big event. You know what I mean? Yeah. If I only know that person and I'm meeting all of their friends, I need wine, I need beers, depending on where we are. I just
tequila.
I need stuff. No, not tequila, because I'm not getting loser drunk in front of how's that for a first impression? There's certain intangibles that I would need. You know, like I would need like an open setting, you know, like a beach party or a bonfire or something like that. You know what I mean? Not some fancy dinner. I'm like, oh, like who's this? I'm like, everyone's just like staring at you. I don't like that. I need something a little bit more casual.
Fair.
Yeah.
That's like, that's like, what's it called? The other day though, the first time when we put Carly in the Facebook group chat, one of our friends invited her into the group chat with like, I think 16 other people. And I sat there, I was like, I don't fucking know how this is going to go over. I'm like, this is either going to be really, really good or just like a complete total dumpster fire. You know what I mean? Because like you guys said, it's like trial by fire. You're being thrown to the wolves and you're just going to have to wait and see what happens. You got no control over it, right?
It was actually a baptism by fire.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Yeah, water and fire.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah.
All right, boys.
Oh, man.
Okay. Any other questions about introducing girls into the friend group or families?
No. I was gonna say a mean joke there, but I didn't. It was about no one in particular. I was gonna say we don't need to talk about the bitches anymore. But that's just, see, you made me say it. I actually didn't say it. Raffle said it.
No, so, I applaud you for saying it. I think it's a good move. I think it's ballsy.
Yeah, it's kind of like a blanket statement, you know? Yeah. What do you do in your last episode? You make edgy statements. Try and get the buzz going. If you see the viewership go up to like 300, let's just end it and let's just like leave.
Yeah. Okay.
Probably
it's always best to go out on top.
Yeah. Seriously. Okay. I got another topic. Or actually, hey, take the reins, dude, if you're ready.
All right. I'm ready. Boys, wills. So what happens if one of us fucking kicks the bucket? And do you guys have a will? I don't. I don't even have fucking
God, no, dude. We're in our 20s, dude. If you have a will, that's fucked up.
Yeah. So what was the question over wills? I don't really know where we wanted to go with that.
So it was because, so I went over to my parents' house over the last weekend, and my grandparents are like, they've made their will, and like it's just like fine tuning things, I guess, at times. Yeah. And he had texted me and my brother, and he was like, hey, do you guys want to come over and like sort out some things for the will? And like, I kind of pieced through that statement, and he was basically like getting through some physical items, like actual like knickknacks and just like things he has that would probably otherwise be donated. Oh, yeah. So they weren't not like almost, there was a few things, but most things were like not heavy sentimental value. But either way, it got us both talking just about like wills and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And just how like eerie the conversation is talking about someone about their will. Like, it's just a very, very, especially your grandparents, dude, like people that are old. It's yeah. fucked.
The well, it's a very real conversation to have.
Fucked.
Right?
Yeah, it's right fucked up. I mean, I'll shout out my grandpa. He gave me some sick tennis balls.
There you go. It's like it's something that you never really consider, and you don't like think about them dying anytime soon or like passing anytime soon, right? But it's like the moment you bring it, you like say the word "will," it's like holy shit, you realize how old they are, and it's like yep. something could happen at any point in their lives. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like we were talking about my grandparents the other day, and it's like we were talking about going to visit them back in Poland next year, and it's like we're kind of planning on making it a little bit more of an urgent trip, right? But it's like they're in yeah. their 70s, you know what I mean? So it's like realistically anything can happen. Like you want them to live for yeah. another 20 years. That sounds like a long time, but
mm-hmm. oh yeah,
anything and can happen Megan's, in the next like 5, 10, 15 years.
Yeah, Megan's family and I've heard of a lot of families that do this, and they kind of they don't do this all the time, but you kind of like start dubbing every trip to go see people as like this might be the last one.
Yeah.
Like you do that for a long time. You do it like multiple times. It's just like a very eerie feeling sometimes.
Do you find it weird that we don't consider that for ourselves though?
Yeah. Like all the time.
When we hang out, because it's like anything could happen. Like a freak accident could happen. One of us yeah. could get into a car crash or something. Somebody could die, pass away or something like that. And then next thing you know, it's like they're gone that's and you would have never thought it's, yeah, and that was the last one. Yeah. The last thing you say to somebody could be really bad. It could be really good, but.
It's actually so interesting that we talk about this, and I'll share kind of a personal story. So I guess maybe I want to say it was 4 months ago. My grandfather on my dad's side passed away. And this is a super touchy story. So I'm not emotional. Like I'm not going to get emotional about it, but you know, he came from Lethbridge over to the island to see my dad. Obviously my grandma was there too. And he was 92. Like he was old. And we, you know, I saw him and, you know, there was a little bit of me, and this is such a negative thought in my mind, but my dad kind of pointed it out to me as well, saying like, you know, like he's old, like, you know, we may not like, he may not last, or, you know, like, you know, he's just getting older. And, you know, I really took that and like, I embraced so much time with him in that moment. And sure enough, that was actually the last time I saw him. And like, it was crazy to say, like, you know, I remember hugging him at the last point. It was just like, wow, like that yeah. is so surreal to me, but I'll always have that memory of him kind of, you know, that was the last time.
Yeah.
You know, we went to that goats on a roof place on the island. We had a couple drinks just of, you know, some rum. Some whiskey.
He was fucking rooting tooting all the way to his last days, eh?
Oh yeah.
Hell yeah.
And he was just like, and still like great sense of humor. And like, I feel like that was like a perfect, like it almost provided some sort of comfort for me. Obviously when I was upset, like obviously that he's gone. But it just like, it's an interesting thought. You know what I mean? Like when,
absolutely.
When that's kind of put to you about like your parents, you know what I mean? Like your parents, Rath, say like, you know, like we should probably go out and see them. Not yeah. saying anything's wrong with them, but hey, you know, never know. Like when is that last time? Like we're all getting older, but our parents are getting older. Our grandparents yeah. are getting older. And it's so corny to say, but you really want to savor that time
yeah.
that you have with them.
Exactly.
You know,
and the shitty thing is too, it's like you never really consider it. Like you always think about how much older you're getting, but like you said, it's like they're getting older too. And it's just kind of like a thought mm-hmm. in the back of your mind that it's like, hey, every single year that passes, they're a year older too. And it's just like, they're one step closer to whatever yeah. might happen.
And it's crazy too, because for me, like, obviously like the original emotions are, you know, I don't see them enough. I don't, you know, do all this. And obviously like mm-hmm. COVID's a thing, but you know, even before that, you know, you're like, well, like what effort have I made? You know, they always wish you a happy birthday. There's always yeah. something in the mail that comes for you.
Yeah.
And it's just so wild, like how much like your grandparents care about you. And I guess yeah. we're kind of stemming off from like the whole will thing, but like nonetheless though, like you want to have that relationship with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Know? So
yeah. Yeah, I would say that the interesting point for me is like looking at the different generations of your family and seeing what stage of life they are, like when you start going through these thoughts. Like
yeah.
I remember being a little kid and like kind of like your first dealings with death of like a significant person in your life, whether it be like family member or whatever. And you kind of, like, the first time it hits you, I felt like it hit me very hard on just, like, trying to understand what the fuck's going on.
Yeah.
And then also, I feel like I'm going to go through many stages of life where it just kind of hits you for, like, a long time and you get over it or you kind of work through it. But anytime that happens, I kind of look at the different people in my life, like my grandparents both being in their, like, early 70s, I think, and not the best health-wise. But, yeah, like, kind of thinking, okay, and my parents being in their early 50s, also not the greatest health on some of them there. But you kind of think to yourself, not only do I feel like I need to start like allocating time now, but I feel like if I wait at all, like they're only getting older and the things they can do are more limited. Like, yes, you can, you can spend quality time with someone of any age, but in terms of like what my grandparents were able to do when they were in their like late 50s, early 60s compared to what they can do now. Like, I wish I had realized that when I was a fucking dumbass 12-year-old and 15-year-old, but
yeah, like you almost beat yourself up for it in a way, because it's like, fuck, like, and obviously, like, you know, your parent, you're like, your grandparents and your parents are never like, you know, hold that against you, you know what I mean? It's just get caught up in life, and like, I feel like now is such a crazy stage of our lives where we're all growing up and we're all trying to build a career and, you know, have relationships and all this type of thing, and you just get caught, and this is like something that I realized is like you just get caught in your own shit, and it's no fault, like it's no fault of your own, you're just busy. And like, I think like the worst part is like your grandparents are always thinking about you, and they understand. That's the worst feeling, is like they're thinking of you, and like probably on like a daily basis, at least like a weekly. Like, hey, I wonder how Raph is doing. I wonder how Elijah's doing. I wonder how Josh is doing. You know, that those thoughts are going through their mind. And it's like, how often do I think about, hey, like, how's my grandma doing? How's my grandpa doing? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just like, and the worst part is like, you think about that and you feel guilty, but they just, they never hold that shit against you.
Well, they understand, because they were at that point at some point in their lives too. Yeah. You know what I mean?
You know what's fucked? There's probably never been one fucking like young child, young adult that has allocated enough time as they think they should. There's never been. No one's ever.
You're always going to think you need to allocate more time with your grandma. Yeah.
And even like, you know what the worst part is? Is like, even the fact that we're talking about this, boys, is that we're going to be that.
Yeah.
You just think, you're like, well, I realized it when I was that age, so I understand, and the cycle fucking continues, and it's just and that's just like a part of life that's actually like so depressing. I'm actually getting sad right now.
I know. So what you're saying is, as older parents and young grandparents, one day we have to break the cycle, and we have to literally probably daily guilt trip these kids.
Yeah,
you know, I'd be like, listen, I think my hip's going out today. Like, I think I'm falling today if you don't come. In fact, I will fall today.
It almost makes me think, it's like, hey, like, what are you doing today? It's like, oh, hey, grandpa, sorry, like, I'm golfing with the boys. It's like, cool, I can still drive a golf cart, and you just go hang out with them.
You're like, oh, I'm meeting this girl first day. It's like, oh, great, I'll pick up the bill. I'll be there soon.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
Man. And then, like, Raph's grandson is going to be like a gaming fucking wizard who's going to be making millions. And Ralph's like, I'll fucking take you any day, Sonny.
Yeah.
And just fucking bury him in Call of Duty. Ball fire him up the old PS4, because it'll be like 80 years old and you'll smoke him.
Dude, I really hope my kids fucking and my grandkids play video games. I think that'd be fucking sick.
That's epic. I can't wait for how good video games are going to be when you're 85 years old, Ralph.
Yeah.
And you're going to be like, you're going to be so fucking mind blown, because you're just going to be out of the game for so long. You're going to be like, holy shit, like, that's so cool.
Yeah, you just like fucking jack into it, and then you're just like physically there. You know what I mean?
Like, it's like that. What was that Gerard Butler movie? It was not good. But it was, that one's like very VR based and like actual real life. That's what I picture gaming being one day. So you actually feel the pain and everything. Fuck.
I have a question for you guys, though, on the topic of wills, if I can gravitate away from this a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, speaking of wills, and say like your grandparents' wills, your parents' wills, all that kind of stuff, would you rather know what you're going to be getting in the will, or would you rather not know? Let's say like hypothetically speaking, you know there's a will, you know that you're in the will, but would you be told exactly what you're getting, or would you not know what you're getting?
I would rather not know, and there's a couple reasons for that. the first one, and like, I hope nobody takes this the wrong way, but yeah, like if you know that you're getting something cool, you're like, oh my God, like I'm getting something so cool. It all, I feel like that possession or whatever it is takes away from that death.
Yeah.
You know, and like it takes something away.
Yeah.
Whereas, okay, you know, if you don't know and you get like an item or whatever it is, you know, and you get that and you're like, wow, like, you know, that I know that my grandma or grandpa thought about me, mm-hmm, when they saw that.
Yeah.
And I think that means a lot to me. You know, yeah, what I mean? It's like, that's one thing. That's one memory that we both shared, that we both remembered. And that's mine now.
See, so I kind of agree with you in that sense. And like, I'd much rather not know, because I feel like that knowing can sometimes cause there to be a lot of internal grief within, or not grief, yeah, but greed within a family.
Absolutely.
So it's like Joshy fell asleep during this movie, but like Knives Out or even something like Grand Budapest, yeah, Hotel, where there's like an individual that passes.
Knives Out. I ended up rewatching it like the next year, actually. So I have seen it. But yes, yeah, I understand that comparison.
Yeah. So same kind of concept. Like there's an individual who dies, and in Grand Budapest Hotel, same thing, an individual who dies and they leave something. In Knives Out, the guy leaves something to his caretaker. And then in Grand Budapest Hotel, they leave it to a lobbyman, essentially. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you can see the families have like this like feeling of entitlement to receive this very, very valuable gift that they thought would belong to them. But in reality, it's like it belongs to an individual who meant so much more than those people did. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that causes like this internal conflict within the family. So I think that's kind of why it's a bad thing to know exactly what you're going to be receiving, because other people might not take well to it and they might despise you for it, you know?
Yeah. Like I think a perfect comparison of that, and I'll let E jump in here in a sec, is another movie reference is, have you guys seen Gran Torino?
Ages ago.
With, yeah. Okay, so remember at the very end, like Clint Eastwood, spoiler alert, so if you want to watch Gran Torino and you don't want to spoiler, turn this off. It's
from like fucking 2007, relax. Yeah,
anyway, you've been living under a rock too.
Okay, cool. But remember at the end, Clint Eastwood dies, his character, yeah, dies, and his granddaughter, who treated him like shit, expected, yeah, that she would get the Gran Torino.
Yeah.
He leaves it to the friend that actually had more of an impact on his life.
Yeah.
3 months than she ever would have.
Yeah.
You know? So it's an interesting kind of thought. You know what I mean? Like, I feel you should never try, and as your grandparents get older, I feel like that's such a greedy and just kind of shitty thing to do. It's like, hey, like my grandparent dies, like I want to make sure I get that. It's like, what do you mean? Like, yeah, in order for you to get that, you have to wait for your grandfather to die. Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, who are you?
You're almost, yeah, like banking, I mean, on their death in that sense.
Yeah, because I would trade everything in that they gave me to get them back. You know 100%. What I mean? So anyway,
and those are the people who almost like deserve those kinds of gifts. It's like those, yeah, gifts hold little to no value to them. That is just kind of like they want those gifts for the memories, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's the sentimental stuff. Anyway,
exactly.
Where do you stand on it? Would you rather know or not know?
Oh, definitely rather not know. Absolutely. I would even go as far as to say, like, I would almost rather just completely opt out of like being in the will, like,
yeah,
just to like almost know for sure that I made the choice and like I don't want that to be like a connection of any kind. I get like maybe I fuck up and I lose a bunch of money, but I mean, in the end of it, like looking back at my life, if financially I don't get to where I want to, I don't believe it's going to be because of an inheritance or not or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I do have this kind of mixed feeling about wills and just about like the way money works and stuff like that. Not because I do get like, if you don't give it to someone, I'm pretty sure the government just takes it, doesn't it? Like,
yeah, I
imagine.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think it depends on what it is.
Yeah. Like if it's well, like, let's just state, say like, then yeah, like, yeah. What happens if like a really rich person just dies, has no will?
Yeah. Well, the
what
thing
the fuck
is,
happens?
I actually learned in my computer investigations class, we, yeah, got on this website where it actually shows a list of bank accounts that are of deceased people, and there's just unclaimed money just sitting there.
Yeah, what the
and
fuck,
like,
dude?
And like the totals that I saw, it's like some people had, you know, 25,000 that's just unclaimed. Then there's like, yeah, $200, and it's just like bank accounts from people that are dead. So yeah. I don't really know what happens to it. I think it's probably like a
there's a way they
lost and found where it's like, okay, if this isn't claimed in the next 20 years, like we take it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yes. Totally. Yeah. That's the weird. So I totally think like wills are great. Don't get me wrong, but I think just any like once there's like the single most or single slightest evidence of there being like any kind of tension about it, then I'm out. Like, take me out of it. I don't want anything to do with it.
Yeah. No, that's
just stupid at that point.
Yeah. Like, as soon as someone starts fighting over something, it's like, come on, man. Like,
what are you doing?
If you want to be that greedy, like, sure. But
yeah,
it's just like, I don't know. That the feeling that you have with, like, obviously that person that's probably close to you because they're a family member, it's like, really? Like, you really want to fight over this? It's like, it was given to me, but you want it? It's like, come on. Like, what are we doing here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, in the end of it. Yeah. But shout out, if you got some tennis balls, I will take them. That's basically what we're talking about right now.
Well done.
Let's bounce it to a way more emotional thing to talk about. Let's get the real tears going here. I'm talking to all you fucking nose pickers out there. All you homeboys, ride with me. Ride with me on this one. My mom is in the chat too. What's up, mama?
I can. Yeah,
we're talking about wills. That's right.
I can.
Talked about it. Kim, say hi to Carly. Just you can write, hey Carl. It's easy for you. You know what you're doing there. Also, so talking about nose pickers. Basically, so I put out this poll on Twitter. This was today. I basically just said straight up question requiring a straight up answer. Who picks you? Do you guys pick your nose? Fucking 16 people had the audacity to say no. Are you kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me? Nowadays,
you had a decent amount of responses on that poll too, hey?
Yeah, it was like 80 people or something like that.
Yeah.
And maybe you, like, I'll throw it over to you guys very quick here, but I'm sorry. If you try and tell me you don't, you're a fucking liar, dude. Like, you are lying through your nose.
Fellas,
you guys are a couple knuckles deep daily, right?
Easily.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to admit it, but yeah.
I just the thing is though, boys, and here's my thing is when people say that, oh, I don't pick my nose, really? You're telling me that there's not like some dried up fucking booger in your schnoz that every time you breathe in there's a whistling noise and you just can't get it out? now and they're like, oh, I blow my nose. No, you don't. You don't blow it out because that shit doesn't come out of your nose when you blow it out. The only time people blow their nose is when they're fucking sick. And if you have a runny nose, like if you have, okay, here's my thing. If you have dried up snot, you pick your nose. If you have a runny nose, you blow it because it'll come out because it's just thick. Okay. So if you have a runny nose, then yeah, sure. People blow their nose. But to say that in the last week, that if we ask those 80 people, they have not once drilled for gold, you're a fucking liar. You are a liar.
And I would really like some takes. I would really like some takes from some female listeners as to if they pick their nose or not.
Yeah, I need some fucking feedback on that one too.
Dude, I think they nodding? Do it in a less obvious way. They do it in a less obvious way.
Because
what they'll do is like this to me, if you like massage your nose almost like that, like shit will actually come out of it, I would say. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, they're not full-on, like, up in the nostrils.
I'm just going to jump into this real quick. I'm going to fucking go through my day real quick here for you guys.
Every single nose pick ever.
I'm going to give you the fucking the lowdown of how this works for me. And this might lead to breaking some friendships. This might lead to people never wanting to shake hands with me again. I don't give two fucks because this is who I am. Take it or leave it. So okay. I'll wake up in the morning and whatever. Bob's your uncle. Maybe take a peek at each one. See what's up. You know, you sleep for a long time. We all do it with our eyes. We all get boogers in our eyes. Take that out. Okay, so maybe I don't get anything. That's not really the juicy part of the story. But I go to work. I work from like 8:30 to 3, something like that. So a good 6.5 hours. I will not pick my nose there. It's you got to keep it professional out there, people. It's probably part of like responsibilities and ethics. Don't pick your nose at work. Fair enough. During a pandemic, also not a smart thing to do. So I don't do that. When I get in my car, I drive the same way home like everyone does every time. There's a certain part of my drive. There, like the first part of my 12-minute drive home, or 10, 12 to 15 minutes is bottlenecked. And so I don't do anything there because I'm like, you're bumper to bumper with people and people are looking right at. I'm not trying because once I start picking, this is now a 5 minute like clear out. Like I need it all going. Like I'm not going in for just, I'm not getting a taste. I'm getting the whole fucking thing. So
yeah.
I wait until I'm past the bottlenecked area and then I get onto the highway. I do like a little like long circle merge onto the highway. And there's even a part of this merge where I pass oncoming that's usually bottlenecked as well. So I don't do it there because I don't want to risk being seen. But the minute that I am like parallel with my traffic that's also going like 120, dude, it's game on. Like it's game on. And man, sometimes the satisfying feeling of getting like a fucking day's worth of boogers out your nose, I can't equate that. That's serenity. That is serenity right there. What do I do with it after? I try and flick it out the window.
So this is leading into my question actually. So like I think all of us can all admit that at some point on our commute home we do exactly that. Josh, you can admit it. You're not going to fucking admit it, but you can admit it
easily.
Yeah. My big question for you guys is: are you big pick and flick people, or do you pick and do you wipe?
In the car? I will say I've picked and wiped before. I'm not proud of it. I will sell my car one day, and I will not tell the person who's buying it. Yeah. But
Have you guys ever done the Yolo? It's like you do it, and then it's like you just like keep it on your finger and like grind it into dust.
Yes, you're not the only one that does that. Thank fuck. That's so weird that we all do that, dude. And Roth, the wetter it is, the longer it takes. But if you just so commit, long. It will work eventually.
Eventually, sometimes like just my entire car commute home, just like sitting there, just like get out the car, just done.
Are you ever driving and like you realize you're like, I've been doing this for like 3 minutes. Like, what? Why isn't it working?
One awkward moment where you have to touch your steering wheel with your left hand, but your left hand is like covered in fucking. So you're like, oh god, looks like I'm not throwing on a blinker this time. Just change to the right lane.
I think for me, so like if I've ever picked it in my car, it honestly like this, I'm not so proud to say this, but like I've picked it. Like if it's really running, like I'm not even joking. Like I'll pull one out. I'm like, oh my god, like it's
puts it back in.
Like it's runny, you know what I mean? You pull it out and it's hard and then it runs. Like that's easily wiped on the floor mat on my car.
The floor mat, the side of your seat, everything like that is just fucking disgusting.
And you know what though? I like how Elijah is very like in tune as to like when he does it, even when he's in his car. Because I'm in my car, dude, I don't care if I'm bumping a bumper. If these people want to judge me, what are they going to do?
If you judge me,
I'm going to roll down my window and flick it at your car anyway.
Roll down their window, booger picker, and then just drive off.
And then as their window is being rolled down, they're judging me. I'll flick it into their car and peel out and see you later.
Dude, are you telling me bumper to bumper, you are... My mom currently says she is dry heaving right now.
I know that feeling, Kim, very well, dry heaving. I do it when I'm drunk.
I was going to say, though, there is no way you are bumper to bumper with someone and you're doing that. Like, I'm very open about doing it, but I kind of fear getting caught.
Okay, so...
It's like, I don't want to get caught doing it.
I actually do a couple things here to avoid, okay? So... The car in front of me, I don't give a shit because I'm not making direct eye contact with me.
Yes, if fair. Behind you, probably good.
If I have to drill, I actually like stop at a distance where if they shoulder check, my face is blocked by the pillar of their car.
Yeah.
So they don't see me. The person that's like in my blind spot back to my left, they can see it. I don't give a shit because I'm not paid. Yeah. Face to them, but I'll never. You're right. I don't think I'll ever pull alongside someone and just shove it up.
just go. And like you do, you don't even do like the front. Like you do like the full knuckle turn, and like you're fucking angles too.
Know, like I'm like that. I'm a scraper. I scrape it out of the side of my nose. And
I think I'm like a try and get as far back. I think I go along like the outside wall, and then I try and get as deep as I can, and then cut back in and bring it all down.
You go like out the wall and then you go in?
I think so. I want to say that's what I think that's like kind of what I do. I'm trying to remember. I feel like your index finger, the first time you go in, like for that first time of the day or like that big time, I feel like it's kind of like a feeling out for like a half second. You're like, you almost like scan the area. You're like, all right, where's the damage? Where do I got to go? And then you go from there.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I think.
Okay. So as much as I love talking about nose picking, can we actually move on?
Yeah. One sec. I have one like real quick question to wrap it up. If you could pick Assad in the fucking Twitch chat says, use your pinky. It's a game changer. I don't think I feel like I don't have the dexterity with the pinky.
No, he's honestly right. It's like when you take the scalpel over the hammer and you just go in there and you just gotta.
if you pick your nose like that, you're fucked. Like, who are you, fucking Dr. Evil? Like,
yeah, seriously, you're doing that, dude. Oh my god. Okay, real quick though, if you could choose one thing to normalize in society, like completely destigmatize, would you rather be farting or picking your nose?
Farting for sure.
You think so?
Farting is such a bigger relief.
Yeah, but, you're okay, right. You're right.
Here's my thing about that though, is the funniest thing about that is like, could you imagine just like at work? Like, I want like the same sense of humor we have around farts to still carry over into that question.
No. You know what
I mean? I don't want it to be normalized to the fact where like people don't bat an eyelash. Like, I still want people to think it's funny. So that way it's like no one's grossed out and they don't smell. You know what I mean? Like, you're at work, you're talking to someone, they just let one go and you guys just start laughing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Dude, can you imagine being in a restaurant if everyone's just ripping ass and it's totally kosher? Like, that's like people coughing. Imagine, everyone's just...
Dude, could you imagine your service taking an order, like you just get your food, like you're sitting in a booth, server walks by, and just like lets
and like your... it's kind of like sneezing. You're just like, oh, sorry, my bad. Excuse me. Sorry, just had a massive burger for my break. My bad. Chili's on special today. Sorry, folks. Oh, holy fuck.
Listen to the Islanders Never Say Die podcast, your one-stop shop for Islanders news, analysis, and opinions, featuring the biggest personalities in sports podcasting, TJ and the Grumpy Old Man.
That's right, TJ. If you want your opinions viewed through orange and blue-colored glasses from an Islander Bobo and charter member of the In Louis Trust crowd, you'll love the measured commentary from TJ. On the other hand, if you want the unvarnished truth of a hockey purist, a genius, a legend, and an all-around great guy, the Grumpy Old Man's insane ramblings will be just what you need to survive each and every week.
An all-around great guy? Well, we also have weekly installments of Stump the Grump, an absolute fan favorite. Make sure to participate in our live streams and listen every Monday and Thursday to the bi-weekly podcast. You can find the Islanders Never Say Die podcast on the Hockey Podcast Network.
Anyway, all right, let's move it on here. So,
okay.
Stick and rink fashion, we always kind of fuck around. Normally, it only takes 25 minutes. We're at 52 minutes on the pod, and we haven't even talked sports for the final time.
Yeah. Haven't even gotten there yet.
So in case you missed it, the NHL playoffs are happening.
Been happening.
The Western Conference Finals and Eastern Conference Finals are a go. So we just had game one between Tampa Bay and New York. We'll get to that in a second. But the last time we recorded, boys, we were recording in game six of the Colorado and Vegas series. Vegas ended up going on to win in seven. Congratulations to the Vegas Golden Knights. We're going to be playing against Montreal tomorrow, which is Monday. So, E, the Vegas-Colorado series. Thoughts, concerns, any takes? Like,
oh, big takes.
What happened here?
Well, I would say it's like a Jekyll and Hyde situation, dude. Like, that was incredible, the turnaround. Not so much of what Vegas was doing, because they really had one off game and that was it with them, I would say.
Yeah.
And they kind of then regained their form. It was more Colorado, where, you know, they fucking dominated the first round. They looked like they looked like the Monstars out there. It was cruel what they were doing to the Blues.
Absolutely.
And then even in game one of this series, when Vegas was flat, that was just reassurance that what we saw in the first round was going to be much of the same of what we see in the second. And then carry forward even game two. So they win game two, but they don't deserve to win it. They get grossly outplayed. Yeah. And so I think at that point you say, okay, Vegas kind of, you know, kind of blew. Well, apparently you said Vegas 1-7. I guess I think you said 6.
Or 6. Vegas 1-6. Sorry.
That was I thought you said 6.
I said 7.
That's all right. So, yeah. So, I mean, I at that point in that series, I thought because Vegas had lost that game, I thought the series was over. I didn't think it would end in 4, but I thought maybe, you know, 5 or 6. I thought they had blew their chance by not getting that game.
Yeah.
And fuck was I wrong, dude. This just goes back to, let's think of any scenario where a playoff team that's a very good regular season team and someone that's feared in the playoffs has only had really one go-to player, maybe two.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Flames, Johnny Gaudreau, didn't work out very well for many years. Same thing with the Avs now for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
Even Toronto, I know they got a few guns. It's not working out. These guys get shut down, man. And Vegas is like a 12-headed monster, dude. They've got, like, it's insane what they've got turning at times. So
they have depth on depth. And you know, it's so crazy because when I look at a team like Vegas and I look at a team like Colorado, the depth on Vegas is undeniable. But they don't have like the true superstars that Colorado has. But it almost makes you wonder, you know, do you need some like a game? Like, who's the game changer on Vegas? Who is it? Like, who's the guy that's going to steal the series? You know, I think the case could maybe be made for Marc-Andre Fleury, but maybe not. I don't know. Maybe Mark.
Well, and they don't even need him to be like a steal the series because of how good their team is.
Exactly. So when I look at a team like Colorado, they need their first line to produce. Edmonton needs their first line to produce. Toronto needs their first line to produce. And Vegas just, they don't need it. They don't. And it's wild to me. And this is where I think, and we'll kind of get to Tampa Bay in a sec, but this is where Tampa Bay is just completely over the edge because they have superstars, plus they have the depth to back it up, which is nuts. Like, it's undeniable. But, you know, it was McKinnon, like, he was pretty much silent in that series. He didn't really do a lot after game one. And it's hard. And it seemed like Vegas did a really good job at shutting down Cale Makar, not nearly giving him as much space as St. Louis did, and as much as they did in game one. So it's interesting. But, you know, the quote that really kind of stands out to me is the post-game press conference after – it wasn't at right after they left, but McKinnon was the quote saying, like, I'm going into my 9th year and I haven't won shit.
Yeah.
So, you know what I like, though, is a guy who just lost, but he's getting hungrier and hungrier.
Which
is huge because it's true. And the fact that Nathan McKinnon has been in this league for 9 fucking years, that's crazy to me.
Oh, that's wild. It's time flies, doesn't it?
Like, to think that Colorado really started to get good maybe 3 years ago and McKinnon has been on the same team for the previous 6 before that. Like, you really have to trust that process, in the words of Joel Embiid. So, I mean, it's tough for Colorado, but they're going to be back. They're going to, I think.
They're set up really nicely. That's for sure.
I think they are. And do I think Grubauer is the answer long-term? No, I don't see that for Colorado. I think he's actually kind of old. Is he not? Like, he's in his 30s.
You think so?
I don't think he's young. He's not 29. Old. Like, he's 29. So
I mean, for a goalie, that's pretty young still.
Yeah. For a goalie, it's pretty young, but I mean, as soon as you turn 30, like, you're kind of on, like, you're supposed to be kind of entering your prime, and Grubauer had a great year. I mean, he's a Vezina Trophy candidate, which is huge. But, you know, I think just if you can shut down, and this is the easiest saying that everyone says about these kind of first line teams, is if you shut down their first line, like, you can win. Yeah. And that's what Vegas does, right? Like, they neutralize your first line because they're so good defensively, and then their second and third lines provide so much secondary scoring that you don't really have a chance. And even when you fuck up, you still have Flower. You still have the Flower backing you up. So,
yeah.
I mean, his resume speaks for itself. So, Vegas, man, like, was I shocked that Vegas won in 6? Yeah, honestly, I actually thought it would be a close series. I knew Colorado wasn't going to walk them. I knew Vegas wasn't, I wasn't expecting them to walk them, but they did. They got flat out outplayed.
Little, yeah, a little gentleman sweep there. Mm-hmm. Fucked them right up. Did you happen to catch this interview question that a reporter asked?
Yeah.
That
so and we won't touch on
Raffle, have you seen it?
I sent it.
I watched it. I checked it out.
As soon as it came out, I sent it to Raph because I knew that we were talking about it the previous two episodes ago. And I'm like, exhibit A of bad media questions. Like,
dude, like,
and just what the fuck, man? Like,
what are you doing? Well, I mean, actually, I can't hate on it that much because I kind of loved it. Like, it was kind of fucking hilarious. Well,
no, it, yeah. Why,
can we reiterate the question? So if anybody hadn't seen it, they now know what it is.
It was pretty much the reporter asking Nathan MacKinnon, it's like, hey, you know, when you go into next season, do you just say like, fuck it, not think as much? That's pretty much what
I said. And on top of that, he was like, he did not have his question figured out before he was asking.
No,
he was like, no. He was like, oh, Nathan, like, you know, I'm looking at this team and I'm trying to figure it out. And like, I'm sure you're trying to figure it out. And just tell me if I'm right or on the right track. But like, do you ever just like, do you guys just want to say like, fuck it and just not think about it? I was like, oh my God, dude. What?
Yeah. And
what do you want him to say?
Who let this guy ask that question? Who okayed this?
And that's the thing. And you know what, though? I'm kind of glad he asked it because it's just the cherry on top of mine and Elijah's standpoint of mainstream media and just like post-game press conference. And it was so ironic that we had recorded and talked about this topic with the French Open and that is asked. So
yeah,
which is so interesting because like some guys like, and this is that perfect example is some people just in those post-game press conferences, like they don't know what's going on. They don't even know why they're there. They're just trying to get like a headline. They're trying to get a quote. And I think there was another one, and I don't know if it was actually from the French Open, not this year, but maybe like 5 or 6 years ago, or it was from a tennis tournament, but some fucking guy asked the loser of the match, how did they feel winning? Yeah. I think it was like Gaël Monfils. He's a French tennis player.
Gaël Monfils, yeah.
Yeah, Gaël Monfils. And he goes into the mic and he's like, I lost. And he instantly looks at the media rep next to him. He's like, why am I here? So it's just a whirlwind of just shittiness. And you could tell by Nathan MacKinnon's reaction. He was literally like, what are we doing here? Like, what the fuck? Like, why do you guys want to interview me right now? Like, what do you guys want? Like, we got killed. You know what I mean? Like, that's the end of it. So it was funny, but it just kind of reiterated mine and Elijah's point of like, that was like the pinnacle of just the worst question.
But Josh, it was so bad that it was good. Like,
yeah,
if we had to form the way that media is going to be, I still want that. I actually want that guy there. I want him front and center every interview because he's going to get me a sound bite. That guy's fucking legendary. Keep him around. But I mean, the fact is that he represents a lot of what media is nowadays. Maybe they don't stumble over their words and create what a sound bite he does. But you're right in that that's kind of what it is. A lot of the times it's a question asking an answer of like, what the fuck do you expect someone to say?
Yeah. Exactly.
Either way, we've beat that drum a lot. What was I going to say?
We can move on if you want.
Yeah, I just want to quickly say this because I might even like intentionally say this to try and clip it later. But this is to all, once again, my like angry address to Canucks fan per episode happens usually once. This is a shout out to all you fucking dreamers about being a fans of a hockey team. Is that, as you can now see, two full rounds into this playoffs, we've had teams like Edmonton, teams like Toronto, teams like Colorado, teams like, what's another stacked team that didn't do very well? Is there any other ones that I'm missing?
Boston.
They were close. I would say that I don't want to say they failed because they almost got to the third round, right?
Florida was another one.
Florida. Okay, so these are all teams that this entire Canucks fan base is saying, Carolina, another one. It's all these things. They're saying they're ripping on Jim Benning and they're ripping on just like the way this team's built with all the contracts, all the fourth liners. Look, open your head, open your eyes, dude. These teams that are supposedly built perfectly also don't win Like, like, I hate to say it, in the end of the day, we had just as a successful season as Colorado did. And actually, for all those fucking biters out there who love draft picks so much, I guess we had a better season because we didn't win and we get a better draft pick. Sure, let's go that route. The fact is, you really don't know. And broadcasters mentioned this about Tampa, is that the only reason their team is as good as it is because of patience. Like, dude, Hedman's been in the league for like 13 years now or something like that. It's been a long time.
Kucherov is 29.
Dude, like,
he only started to get good when he was like 26.
Yeah. And people are out here like just absolutely burning the city down because they're flying planes with banners in the sky because we're not winning cups we're not making it to the third round when Pettersson, Hughes, and all these guys are all less than 24 years old. It's like, how fucking dumb are you? You need to open up your eyes and realize that if you have a good team, okay, you just did the hardest part. Now the easiest part is watching them grow. That's in my opinion what this team needs to do year after year for the next 2 to 3 years. Watch this team grow. Yeah. So that's my rant. I'm done now. Thank you for bearing with me.
I think the other side of it though is, and this is talking about Ryan Whitney on Spin Chicklets, is he was addressing Montreal fans because Montreal fans hate him now because he doesn't believe in the Habs. But what he was saying though was, you know, for all the Montreal fans out there, and I have to agree, I'm not saying I'm rooting against them because like they still had to play to get here, but have they kind of gotten a little bit of luck? Yeah,
totally. I mean,
you didn't have to play against John Tavares in the first round, so that's a second line all-star center.
Probably a first line on most teams.
First line, yeah, first line on probably like 90% of NHL teams. So you didn't really have to play against him. Okay, cool, fine. You get to the second round. Well, you lose Scheifele for 4 games. So, and again, like, obviously, if you swept, like, I think Scheifele, obviously, like, you know, him not being there in the first 4 games, I think, obviously, helped the Canadians win. I don't think he was a deciding factor. But when like, you still, like, that's a little bit of luck. You know, at the end of the day, you still have to beat the team. You still have to outplay them. I'm not denying that. I'm not taking away anything from Montreal's victories. But when you look at that, there are certain intangibles that have come into play. It's like, okay, well, there's always going to be the what-if factor, but we don't give a shit about the what-ifs. It didn't happen, so it's only speculation at that point. However, you can obviously, any true hockey fan knows that when you're playing a team and John Tavares is not in the lineup, or Mark Scheifele is not in the lineup, that is a big hit. You know, totally. It's just like if Connor McDavid were to get hurt and Winnipeg still swept Edmonton, there'd be so many Edmonton fans saying, oh, we lost because we didn't have McDavid, when really he was there and you still got swept. So clearly, like, he's not that big of a factor, apparently. However, the conversation can be had. So, like, I think there's always teams that just need a little bit of luck to win. You know, you can't.
Oh, you have to have the luck. You have to.
There's always going to be a questionable call, whether it's a goal or, you know, maybe a questionable penalty that puts your team on the power play and you get the game winning goal because of that. There's just little things, or like the goalie having a bad game. You know, it was in the semifinal where, it was the shitty goal on, I always forget, the Carolina goalie, not Mrazek. Who's the other one?
Nedeljkovic.
Like that one that squeezed in from him hugging the post. Like, I'm not saying that decides the series, but it decides the outcome of that game, which can in turn affect the momentum of future games played. So, and again, like, it's all just speculation, but teams that win, like, you need those bounces. You need it. It's impossible to say that you don't. You know, you can't win on skill alone. I don't believe that.
Agreed. All right. Anyway. Real quick, let's wrap up some hockey talk by saying, by jumping into today's game real quick, and maybe we'll make a quick mention of the series to come tomorrow with Montreal and Vegas. So the Islanders, can you just really quickly tell me if today's performance has encouraged you to believe they have a chance? Because many people are not giving them a chance in this game or in this series at all.
Dude, honestly, like, the way that the Islanders are playing, if the Islanders somehow beat Tampa Bay and the Islanders go on to win the Stanley Cup. Like, Matt Barzal is he's writing what's his contract at?
He's a RFA at the end of this year, I think. Dude, or a UFA, one of the two.
If the Islanders win the cup, or at least go to the cup, and if they win it, that guy is probably gonna be the highest, if not the second highest paid player in the NHL.
No, he won't. I'll strongly disagree with you there.
No, are you joking?
There's no chance. He won't be. Easily. I'll easily hop off that bandwagon.
Dude. Oh, dude, I don't know, man.
He's in the first year of a 3-year, $7 million per contract, so he's not up for it for another two seasons after this one.
Even if
you gave me, yeah, because he took a bridge deal, much like Besser.
Okay, then I'll retract that. Okay, I thought he was an RFA this year.
Yeah, I said that, but he was an RFA before, and then he signed this deal. Right. So
okay, never mind.
Doing I'll what a lot of guys do. But even you know what? Even theoretically, I'll give you a little bite here. Even theoretically, if he was a free agent as of this year, I had a conversation with our friend at the bar earlier today about the same thing. I don't think he would get paid more than $9 million.
Oh, dude.
I don't see it. I don't see you can't like there. So here's the first point. The Islanders sure as shit ain't paying him more than $9 million because that's just not the way the team's built. If they did win the cup, or even if they made it past this round, the reason they make it is not because of Matt Barzal. It's mostly because of Barry Trotz, I suppose. Everything's tied across the board as reasons they make it. Their goaltending's great. Defense is just playing out of its mind. The forward group just plays as a unit. Like,
yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, you look at Barzal, he is the heart and soul of that offense.
I don't think as big of a gap as you make it out to be, though.
In the team in playoff points.
Okay, so but like even Brock Nelson, like when it comes to that big game,
if Barzal is a UFA at the end of this year, hypothetically, he's getting paid like above $11 million a year.
No chance. There's no chance. And I don't think anyone would give him 11. The thing is, some team out there will give him 10 to 10.5. I don't disagree with that. There is someone out there that would fumble fuck their pen and paper and do that. But yeah. Any smart team would, if they had the cap space, would not pay that man more than $9 million.
Let me ask you this: Who do you think's better, Jack Eichel or Matt Barzal?
Ooh, I think the way like it's all exposure. It's all. If I had to choose, if both of them were going to a
they're both UFAs and they both want to sign with your team. Who are you choosing? Yeah,
I suppose I'm taking Matt like Barzal. She's shown more.
Okay, like, so then look at Eichel's contract.
I see it. I see where you're going with it. Yeah. So I see where you're going with it.
I don't know, man.
I guess I go the route of the player is a beneficiary of the structure. The structure that Torts has given. Now this is opposite to what a lot of people think because his structure limits him from scoring points. Mm-hmm. But also I believe that the structure that Barry Trotz has put in place has allowed him to be on a successful team. That his play style, if he was the alpha on a team, his play style would not be indicative of a successful team.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, just how it is. I think Barry Trotz obviously has like a lot of pull in that locker room, and he's an unreal coach. I mean, you know, this is his second year in New York, but 2 years ago he won the cup with Washington. You know, so there's obviously a trend there. But I don't know, man. I look at New York and they are a wagon, but Barzal is the spearhead of that. Yeah, however, totally. it's credit though. There definitely needs to be some credit to Barry Trotz and just the way his systems ran, the way his offenses ran, the way his power plays ran, everything. So yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting question, but totally. I think Barzal, like if he won the cup and he was a UFA and he was the Conn Smythe winner, that guy's easily getting plus $10.5 million a year.
Nice. Good easy. Talk. Okay. Why don't you finish up by giving me any adjusted prediction for how this series is going to go? And then just give me a brief statement on how you think the Knights and the Canadiens is going to play out.
I mean, listening to Chicklets, it was actually interesting because Biz thinks that the Islanders have way more depth than
the Lightning.
And yeah. I don't know. I mean, after today's game, like, the Islanders will wait you out, man. They will wait you out. It's like a sniper. It's a camper in Call of Duty. They will wait. They will wait all game, and then they will take their chance when it comes, and they have no problem doing that. You know, that's what I would say. But Tampa Bay, man, I think Vasilevskiy had a bit of an off day today. I don't think we'll see it again. I didn't like just kind of the way he played. He just kind of seemed out of position sometimes, and he's the best goalie in the world right now. So I'm going to say Tampa in six.
All right. Fair. Interesting. I'm going to go. If I was able to change my prediction, I'm going New York in seven, dude. I love the way this team's playing right now. Mm-hmm. really quickly about the Knights and Canadians. I got one word. It's going to be ugly. It's going to be ugly what Vegas does to Montreal. It's going to be a fucking peewee team against a grown ass man team. Like, yeah, that's what we're in for.
Dude, that's what everyone has said about Montreal this entire time.
Yeah.
That's what everyone says. And I look at Montreal and, oh yeah, this is going to be their, I don't know if it's going to be the hardest opponent, I would say. I don't think it is. Because obviously if they win, they still have to go to the Stanley Cup final and play either the Islanders or fucking Tampa Bay. But it's, to me, I think Price is only going to be able to take so much.
Yeah.
He's going to have to steal a couple games. He's going to have to steal two. I believe in the Montreal offense that Fleury might actually have a bit of an off game. But
yeah.
I don't know, man. I want to ride Montreal. I really do. So I think I'm going to say Montreal in six.
Okay. Have fun with that one, Josh.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on. We've been yapping for a little while here. Anyways. Do we have time to talk French Open? Can I talk some French Open and a little tennis real quick?
I mean, let's wrap up at, we got 4 minutes for tennis. We'll wrap up at an hour and 20.
Easy. So today, woke up at 6 a.m., watched Tsitsipas versus Djokovic. Fuck, man. That's hard for my tongue to do what I just did.
Welcome to the European names, dude.
Yeah, seriously. Stefanos versus Novak, Serbia versus Greece, 6 a.m., Elijah versus Sleep. It was actually so fun. It was a four hour, 20 minute match or something like that. I loved it. It was an instant classic, which is my new favorite term in sports. If you see the word instant classic next to a game, next to a round of golf, a series, anything like that, that is like, I would rewatch that not live. Like, I would rewatch that having known the outcome of that thing. Mm-hmm. And it's what this was today. It was a 5-set thriller. Stefanos goes up 2-0. So this guy, let's lay the scene real quick for you. Stefanos is 22. He's first Grand Slam appearance. Final appearance, sorry. Novak is 34. He's won 18 Grand Slams before today. So it's like he's got all the experience. Stefanos jumps out to a 2-0 set lead. He plays completely clinical. Novak struggles a lot, lots of unforced errors. Tsitsipas is hitting aces too. He's hitting bombs for serves, and he's got the young legs. I think he's like 6'3". He's got wingspan and speed. He's all over the place. But something happens, dude, in the third set. Where, you know, it was just so even in the first set, I should mention this. In the first set, they're going toe to toe and they end up at 5-5. And how does it go? Sorry, they end up at 4-4 and Tsitsipas is serving. And so in tennis, a big aspect is breaking the other server. If you get a break point and you win that break point, that's a huge thing. Like, you have now taken control of that series because you can just serve out. So Novak breaks him. He's up 5-4. He's serving for the set. And something happens when he sits down. He loses his focus. Tsitsipas comes back, wins that game, wins the tiebreak. Complete change of momentum. The next event in this match was what I want to talk about. So it goes into third set. And you could tell, like Stefanos is intense, dude. He is, like, so laser focused and so, but he's also young. He's so uh-huh. young. And you could tell he's in a position of power in this match. He's in a position of huge leverage. It's almost like he started the game. He had nothing to lose. Just go out there and play your game. You have nothing to lose. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, you get such a big lead that, no, dude, now you have all the pressure on you. Like, you should not blow a 2-0 lead, no matter who you're playing.
Yeah.
And, dude, you could just see something happens to him because Novak comes out. I think he breaks to start the set, or he breaks the second game, one of the two. and he comes out and now he's normal Novak. He's hitting shots. He is not hitting any errors. And you could just see as that set unravels, Stefanos starts talking to himself. And he starts like, you know what we do when we golf, and we say, like, you're a fucking idiot. Like, fuck you, Elijah.
He starts snowballing a little bit.
Yeah. And the snowball starts rolling, dude. Third set, a wipe. Fourth set, not really that close either. And dude, like, you could just tell as the fourth set goes along, because once you go to the fifth deciding set, dude, you're in this game still. Like, you're in this game. Just be in the moment. And you could just see it in his face, dude. He was so in his own head at that moment. I haven't seen that in a while from like a professional level player. Mm-hmm. I don't watch a ton of tennis, but like, that was just electric to me. Isn't it fascinating though that, you know, there's so much information out there, so much specialty coaching out there, there's so much everything, preparation that you can do. But in the end of it, you're still 22 years old.
Yeah.
Like, you still, even if people tell you, hey man, young people in these positions, they always get so frustrated. Don't do that to yourself. You cannot avoid it. You literally can't. It's fine.
But regardless, like, you still have a whole career ahead of you after that. You know what I mean? It's not like this is the end of your career, which I think people get way too into their heads about, right?
Yeah.
Totally.
I watched the final set between them. Yeah. And it just comes down to the experience. And, you know, like you said, like, there's so many coaches for everything. You pay them millions of dollars. You know, like, I think when we were doing that whole news article thing, I said that LeBron James spends $2 million on physical fitness each year. Okay, cool. That's awesome. But at the end of the day, when you're hitting a buzzer beater from beyond the arc, LeBron still has to hit it. Doesn't matter about anything else. You just doesn't matter
how much money you spent on anything.
You just have to make your shot. Like, you got to get it done.
Totally.
And the only person you're battling is your own fucking brain, which is such a mind twist in itself. People can tell you everything they want, but at the end of the day, you're there with your own thoughts and you are deciding the outcome. And it's just, it's so, the brain is such an interesting thing because like, because you hit a shot and if it doesn't work, your brain's like, well, why did you do that?
Yeah.
It's like, well, I don't fucking know. And then it just, like you said, it just fucking snowballs. You know what
the
I mean?
War is on at that
you
point.
You have all the preparation, you have all the coaching. You have all the tools to be successful, but you don't execute. And it's well, why? And dude, Novak Djokovic, man, 19 fucking Grand Slams.
Number after 19. Today.
And can good the case be made if he is the GOAT? He needs to pass Federer, man. He needs to.
This is the thing. So Federer's he's 40.
What I would say though, and I love that because Novak is 6 years younger. And Federer is still somewhat competitive. But, dude, this is the same comparison that Brady has had to Joe Montana. This is what that is. Except Joe Montana in this scenario is still fucking playing. He's still actually being really effective.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, though, like, Joker is coming up, man. He's not done. He's not done. And I watched this guy as a kid. My grandpa loves tennis, and we would always watch Federer, and we'd watch Nadal. And I remember when Joker came in, he was a rookie. And my grandpa's like, this guy's going to be good. Like, he's so good. He's young. He's got a huge wingspan. He serves really quickly. And I didn't really think anything of it, but holy shit. Like, you know, 10 years later, here we are. So it's nuts, man. I think the conversation, I don't think it can be had yet, but Joker is well on his way, easily well on his way. And there's still two majors just this year. We still have the US Open and we still have Wimbledon. So anything can happen.
Seriously. I can't wait for that conversation. I'm down to have a longer one day about it because I'm big team Novak on this one, I think.
Love that.
All right. Guys, I think that wraps it up.
Is that it?
I think that's it. Let the emotions hit you. Just let it all fucking flood in all at once. Stick and rink. What do we say? How do you do a play on words to say goodbye on stick and rink?
Well,
stick it in the grave. It's done.
Oh, yeah, there it is.
I like that.
Stick a fork in it.
Okay, not so much.
That's pretty good. All right.
I mean, I think the biggest thing is just a thank you to all the listeners that have supported us.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're not stopping. We're doing our own thing. But it's been fun, man. I mean, I think obviously the three of us, I think the past 2 years have actually helped us grow, not just as kind of a team, but also as individual podcasters and what we actually want from creating content. And I think THPN and Stick and Rink actually really taught us that. And it just kind of helped us understand the world that we're in terms of sports and recording and just everything. But it's been awesome. I've enjoyed it.
I would say a big shout out to Dylan and Isha, the guys from the network that approached us about doing this. I think, you know, where we are now deciding it's kind of time for a change is, is totally not indicative of the last 2 years and how much fun we had doing it. Like it was especially through a pandemic and trying to figure out like how the hell to do it and how to pivot and figure things out. Those guys are so helpful throughout an entire process of this. They've been nothing but great to us. All the people from the network too, if you guys hear this as well, you guys are gems. Any experience I ever had or we ever had with, you know, Corey and Richie or Tom or any of the guys from different shows, the Hockey Troll, those guys as well, Jordy, I could keep going. In the Dome guy. Yeah, Jordan. Yeah. Fuck, man. There's like, I'll easily forget more. There's no chance I don't. But thank you to them for kind of treating us as family. That was awesome. Yeah. I think, honestly, the biggest thank you for me goes out to kind of our friend, like all of the listeners for sure. And I kind of got to know some of the ones that I didn't know before this show. But I think it's also the people in our lives that have been supporting the show and in many different ways, whether it be part of the live streams and the Twitch chats, all of those, like, you know, trying to and keeping up with all the different changes we make and all the different attempts we have at things. But yeah, the real life people out there that we meet. And if you're not one of those real life people and I don't know you yet, introduce yourself before we start moving on, because I want to take you with us wherever we go next.
Yeah. And honestly, I think it's, you know, obviously the listeners and, you know, the immediate friend group that have always kind of just indirectly like shouted us out, just made a joke. It's like, hey, Stick and Rink, like, let's go. You know, like those are the things that, you know, kind of keep us going and keep us inspired and obviously want to make us, you know, better in terms of content creation and always trying to create the humor and laughs in the sports world and just in the daily world news that Stick and Rink has always provided us with the hot takes and whatnot. So thankful for those guys.
Hell yeah. Raph, any words?
No, dude. Thank you to everybody. Obviously, all the listeners is absolutely fucking huge. Every single guest that we've ever brought on, and that's like always encouraged us. Like, even like if you think about all the Sports Center, like TSN guys that we've brought on, they're just like, hey, you're doing a great job. Yeah, Sports Center, right. They've been just pumping our tires ever since we interviewed them. And it's I don't know, it's always nice to hear somebody who's been in the industry telling you that you're doing a really good job, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, obviously, big shout out to you two for keeping this thing going the whole time, like talking about sports nonstop. So that's absolutely fucking massive. But giant thanks to everybody.
All right, boys.
Yeah, well, thanks. Yeah. Thanks to you guys as well. Hey, thanks to the boys, to the fellas. Mm-hmm. Hey, I don't have a drink, but next time we see each other, we'll cheers.
We're getting down.
Cheers to this. Before this kind of horrible timing on my part, since we just said goodbye, but where to find us next, just stay tuned to all of our channels, all of our socials, everything like that for the next couple of weeks. We're going to be making a couple of like teaser announcements and stuff like that. And then we'll eventually direct everyone on where they can find us and our work upcoming. And you will not go without being told. So don't worry about that.
Oh yeah.
Hell yeah. All right, guys, that's it. Adios. Oh, harder, baby.